The Spinoff Podcast Network. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q Quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix podcast. Tune in today.
Before I tragically went bald at the age of 23, I was like a cross between like Legolas and Jason Priestley from 90210.
Oh my god, so hot.
It is one of the worst things that has ever happened to the nation of New Zealand.
Tēnā koutou katoa, welcome to Gone By Lunchtime. I'm Toby Mann, hi, that's Ben Thomas, hi, that's Annabelle Matha, hi. Is this an emergency podcast? I don't know if it's an emergency podcast, a sort of semi-emergency podcast, a post-emergency podcast.
I think the klaxons have sounded, War has been declared, now we're just digging trenches and getting ready to settle in. For the next 10 months. Ten months of Chris versus Chris.
Chris versus Chris. Amazing, Annabelle. The you know how there's this ongoing gag about how Chris Hipkins drinks Coke Zero and Christopher Luxon is a Pepsi man, and they've been talking about that. That is literally Winston Peters' jazz standard line going back several hundred years, that the Tweedledum and Tweedledee, it's like choosing between Pepsi and Coke. And it's come true. His prophecy, the great Winston Peters prophecy has come true. We literally now have a Coke versus Pepsi election. You must be excited about that, Annabelle.
Super excited about that.
Hey, it wasn't that long ago, maybe 4 days ago, I think. We're talking now on Monday afternoon. It was Thursday afternoon, pretty much the same time. Have I counted correctly? Friday, Saturday, Sunday. 4 days ago that we were in here talking about the resignation of Jacinda Ardern and, you know, just the sort of potential catastrophe that awaited the Labour Party. And could it have been smoother, cleaner, more disciplined, Annabelle?
Well, can I just say that thank God for my tardiness, because if I hadn't made us postpone that pod, we would have recorded something that would have been completely out of date.
I preferred to let people have the impression that we all just sort of, you know, that
we scrambled.
The bat signal was thrown into the sky. Samuel sent out several armed vehicles to escort us to the studio, but actually just running a bit late.
Yeah. But coming back to your question, no, it's been a remarkable textbook handover, and I guess a tribute to how far Labor has come from the messy years of the early 20-teens when it was the revolving door. And even, yeah, seeing him get his standing ovation as he walked into the room there, I mean, I think the polls have probably sharpened everyone's minds. And they know that they can't afford to, you know, what's the word I'm looking for?
Depart from the...
No, not depart. Devolve.
Divorce.
All of those words into like a messy street fight over. Disembowel's good.
That's the sort of theatre that we've been used to for a while. What happened really was in some sense, whether or not it was part of the planning or not, it was to the advantage of those seeking a kind of swift handover, a coronation, a win by acclamation, that all the caucus were gathered together in Napier. So you didn't have these crazy phone trees going around or a particular group of people. So those sorts of things couldn't ferment. Maybe they wouldn't have anyway. But Ben, we had by Friday night that we were being told that by Duncan Webb, the chief whip and returning officer, that there would be a requirement of 7 nominations to be a candidate. And then I think in one of the advisories it was also suggested that if there were to be only one, then that name would be announced after nominations closed at 9 a.m. on Saturday, at which point it was like, okay, I think it's pretty clear what's going on here. And indeed, at about 9:30 on Saturday morning, one name was delivered, and that was Chris Hipkins. And then later on that day, he rocked up to Parliament, gave a press conference in the forecourt, the first as kind of incoming Prime Minister, I think. And then subsequently on Sunday, the caucus meeting came together and endorsed Chris Hipkins formally. He emerged to cheers from the caucus room, having arrived there arm-in-arm with Jacinda Ardern, and quite a both beaming and a sort of, you know, a real symbol of kind of a passing of the baton or whatever. And then emerged, and Carmel Cipollone was, it was clear that Carmel Cipollone was to be the Deputy Prime Minister, Kelvin Davis to remain as the Deputy Leader of the party. Could they have choreographed it better, Ben?
No.
Maybe if the singing kiwi fruits were there. Yeah.
Great point. No, they couldn't have the mournful Japanese whale that was casting a pall over proceedings. They probably had a private ceremony just sort of swaying as she left out the back door.
a giant so maudlin kiwi fruit with wraparound shades and a hoodie.
I still tear up when I think of them. Yeah.
Look, beautifully done. You get the feeling that there may have been a little, you know, there may have been some stirrings perhaps in the way that sort of other names came up that maybe people were sort of thinking of chancing their arm. You know, one thing that the highly dysfunctional leadership changes of both Labour and National oppositions over the past 14 years have given rise to is this kind of culture of horse trading, where, you know, people will kind of put themselves up as a stalking horse only to withdraw, but sort of in exchange for bolstering their chances for a promotion or something. Mm. Doesn't seem to have happened here. So, you know, which I think speaks extremely well of their internal discipline. Shows that, you know, despite Ardern, you know, throwing in the towel or whatever, she obviously still exerts a lot of influence over the caucus, she and Robertson. And, yeah, no, very, very tidily handled. So,
especially given that, and we did talk about this a little bit last time, Grant Robertson ruled himself out so quickly. I mean, that, I suppose, was part of the thinking too. Chris Hipkins revealed today on Tova's show on Today FM that he'd known before Christmas, that he'd been given an indication that there was something she was thinking about. So those parts were sort of presumably reasonably in place. The other thing to say about Grant Robertson is he's staying on as finance minister. He's lost deputy prime minister. It'll be interesting to see. I'm not sure that the Wellington Central selection has been completed yet. I presume he'll still want to do that. But it is someone who'd been looked at for so long as a potential prime minister. He could have been an incredible prime minister. I think he had a lot of the skills. So kind of a word for that in passing. The danger, I guess, now is, and we'll talk a little bit about the tone reset, is that the sort of the pendulum in terms of the assessment of the situation goes from, oh, my God, it's disaster, it's going to be hemorrhaging everywhere, to, oh, actually, they're really good and now they could win. I mean, it's probably said the truth is somewhere in the middle, isn't it? And, you know, we've had the reset, we've had the quite a clear tonal change, and we'll talk about that in a second, but we haven't had the flesh on the bone. And each decision that is made in terms of a reset, in terms of removing a policy, will have an impact on stakeholders. And then when a poll comes out, if a poll were to come out and Labour were to drop by 4 points, 5 points, then who knows what a whole bunch of Labour MPs might think about that and what might happen thereafter.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, the the stability that they obviously had leading into the new leader, that's no guarantee for anything into the future. You could probably expect a little bit of a bump. You know, we always hear about this sort of honeymoon effect.
It's sort of the Australian experience, isn't it?
And I'm not so sure that it happened when Bill English took over from John Key.
Good question.
But look, you know,
did Collins get a honeymoon?
Opposition leaders always do. Always get a little bit of a bump. But with government, there is a sort of sense of discontinuity along with kind of rebirth and regeneration. So, you know, hard to tell, but you would think so. A lot of the Labor people, you know, a lot of sort of Labor people that I've spoken to, you know, do feel sort of newly hopeful in a way that they probably didn't even know that they might would Ardern to resign, in the sense that, you know, there may have been a sense that they were kind of not so much sleepwalking to defeat as, you know, kind of reluctantly trundling on. And now, you know, this changes things up, whether it's a decisive change that, you know, really puts them back in the game. You know, it's at least something different. So,
and the change yesterday, I think you both watched the press conference at the Beehive. I was in the room and it was clear immediately, probably clear even before it began in one sense, that the tone shift was one towards... The word focus was used by Chris Hipkins about a million times in different versions. Bread and butter, he said a few times, focusing on the right now, I think. I mean, it's like it's a very clear brass tacks, you know, we're not going to get drawn away onto flights of fancy or, you know, I asked him about the transformational idea and he said 5.5 years is a long time and he's not interested in catchphrases and, you know,
I heard that one. Yeah.
there's eventually got one in terrifying places to be. But you know, it's not like a repudiation of what came before, but it's a very clear, the moment requires a pragmatism, a prudence, the caution, blah, blah, blah.
Well, he was saying on RNZ this morning, you know, we've had a heavy work program and maybe that's distracted from, you know, we can't do everything at once. Maybe that's distracted from, you know, some of the important issues like dealing with the cost of living crisis. Now, of course, this is in some ways sort of nonsensical, right? Now, you can't sort of imagine that if Grant Robertson is sort of like looking at the financial data coming through and then he says, oh, there's too many distractions. Like, you know, get me Willie Jackson on the blower. Willie, stop messing around with the TVNZ, RNZ, like, merger. We need you up here now working on the budget. I mean, that's not exactly going to help things, right?
No, he prefaced it in the press conference yesterday by saying, I've heard from New Zealanders.
It's about the optics, right?
Yeah. Is that we are distracted and have too many, you know, so he's framed it that way.
The way you communicate with voters is saying that the things that they experience as problems, you understand are problems.
Yeah.
And if you're noodling away with Willie Jackson sort of, you know, having his adventures on long form interview programs, struggling to justify why there is a multi-$100 million revamp of state broadcasting, while you've just sort of, you know, walked 20 kilometres trying to find eggs because you can't afford to fill up your car. Then,
I mean, whether or not many people actually paid attention to that particular merger thing or not, it was sort of a symptom of a wider problem. And, you know, the words used, the things that matter to New Zealand, it's the same language that Christopher Luxon has used. It's the same language that politicians around the world use
ad
nauseam. But it is, I mean, I guess one thing to say it, and that may have some that has some power, but the next thing is, well, what does it amount to? That's what I mean.
And this is the interesting thing, because once you've sort of started listing these things that are diverting the government and distracting its attention and keeping it from the issues that matter, you know, number one, TVNZ RNZ merger. Number two, something to do with Three Waters, in the sense that it's pretty difficult to see them repealing the whole thing.
Well, the first and sort of the backbone of the legislation has gone through in the first bill. And so you could probably, again, do something optically that sort of showed a willingness to pare back.
So do they tweak or do they pause? Do they whatever? Yeah. And then you kind of... then you sort of start to hit, you know, kind of...
Thomas Coughlin had a good piece today in the Herald that worked through a few of the other things. I mean, I think one of the things is that in the kind of vacuum since the announcement that things had to be pared back, even before Jacinda Ardern announced that, the things that people were mentioning, merger and income insurance, and that became, by repetition, almost true. And, you know, it may be that Grant Robertson is absolutely wedded to income insurance because he cares about it, and maybe that lives. I don't think anyone is really holding too much of a candle for the merger anymore. What did you make of it all?
I think over the last few days, you know, like most people, when Dern resigned, you know, most people's reaction is that, well, it's basically all over for Labor, and then reinforced by Robertson's decision not to stand. But, you know, obviously she's had longer to think about this than we've had, and she probably realised, being the astute politician that she is, that actually her going is probably gives Labor a much stronger chance of being elected. I think over the last few days, Hipkins has shown himself to be an excellent communicator, and it's a fine line that he has to balance between not rubbishing Labor's previous agenda and making it look like they had lost their way. So I think by using words like refocused and the times have changed, that's a really smart way of communicating it. I think the difficulty that he's going to have, especially when it comes to issues like Three Waters, which has been really poorly communicated, particularly when it comes to the supposed co-governance, which to my mind is just more like Māori representation than actual co-governance, is that he has to make it more palatable for voters. But at the same time, it can't be so watered down so that it makes the Māori caucus look ineffectual or instigates them to rebel against the minimisation of Māori representation in bills like that. In terms of the merger, I think that actually the vast majority of New Zealanders don't really care about the merger. Who cared about the merger was the media. And so the media were constantly reporting on it. If you look at the Herald, I don't think there's been a single positive column on what the potential benefits of the merger could be. And I think people are irritated by that. They don't want to be reading about the merger. They don't want it at the top of the homepage.
Well, to be
all the
fair,
time.
One of what happened was that National Party was being challenged for the places that they were going to find the savings required to fund tax cuts, and the merger became top of the list. And it's because they gauged, whether by focus grouping or just by talking to people, that even though it's not this massive amount of money, it was something that worked for them because it seemed like, A, an indulgence, B, a distraction, and C, people actually like TVNZ and RNZ. TVNZ and RNZ are the top of all the trust charts. And so, and that was, I think, a critical part of it being pushed to
it's another area where Labor haven't done a very good job of selling the narrative to New Zealanders. Yeah. If it was about efficiencies, greater collaboration, co-locating, all of those things that would better serve audiences, then I think people wouldn't be as irritated by it as what they are now.
I agree.
It's interesting. My theory of John Key as a leader was that he was not good at inspiring people to do things, but he was very good at reassuring them everything was okay. And Ardern's almost sort of the flip side of that, you know, now that we're sort of taking stock. She was very good at inspiring people to do things, to turn out en masse after Christchurch, to, you know, really come together during COVID. You know, I think, as you said, and you know, there was a feeling when, you know, a team of 5 million really meant something. But when you sort of look at it, Labor has lost almost every big issues argument on policy since they've been in government. You know, couldn't convince people on Three Waters, which is, literally about future proofing towns from having shit explode.
Some people in National say, some people in National acknowledge that it's a classic National Party reform that potentially Three Waters have dressed up differently. That's how much it's been messed up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, district health boards, you know, incredibly unpopular, you know. And you know, on tax as well, pretty much everywhere you look, you know, they seem to have lost these arguments politically. And so there is an argument that, you know, Chris Hipkins is a bit more of a scrapper and can get in there and, you know, really kind of fight the corner on it in a way that, you know, Ardern, who was very much about, you know, I think she genuinely believed all the stuff about consensus and bringing people along. But the irony, of course, is that it doesn't bring people along. You know, generally what you're looking for is not actually buy-in for your policies. You're looking for acquiescence as a government.
Or even indifference.
or indifference, yeah. You know, John Key's greatest strength is standing up and going, this thing that you're really worried about, it's not a big deal.
At the end of
Never
the day.
Has. I mean,
at the end of the day.
Never has encouraging kindness, like, provoked more, like, hostility and outrage in our history.
Hey, Annabelle, what about the early start from Chris Hipkins in relation to not just the Māori caucus, but representation of Māori in those top positions, and Te Ao Māori more generally? I mean, Te Pāti Māori, which is obviously a party in opposition, came out hot with a press release saying that they are telling Māori that despite having the largest Māori caucus ever in government, we still are not good enough. That was Rawiri Waititi. So that, you know, that's obviously not representing the position of the Māori caucus, but there was that. Then there was also the stuff on co-governance, much of which I think is inarguable in terms of people misunderstanding what the idea means. And then also a stumble on the articles of the treaty, which he could have got out of the room before, but said, oh, yeah, I can answer those, and then got to two and then couldn't complete. How do you assess that as a start? Is there work to do there?
I think, there's work to do. You would think that most senior politicians would be able to answer that question because it's one that journalists like to trolley out from time to time. I don't think it would have a huge impact with the majority of Māori voters, but I do think the issue that the Māori Party raises is one that they will be able to exploit to good effect during the election. The fact that, you know, despite having the biggest Māori caucus of all time, that no one has been considered good enough to be a Deputy Prime Minister. And that's going to be a tough one for those Māori MPs because, you know, they've already lost Wairiki. Deb is looking strong in Te Tai Hauauru. So the Māori caucus are going to have to think about how they counter that narrative. But it's a valid point that they raise, and not to take anything away from Carmel Sepuluni, because this is an incredible moment for the Pasifika community and, you know, hugely symbolic for them and, you know, and all of those things. But I can see how some of the Māori caucus might feel like they've been kind of put at risk as a result. But I'm sure that there's also really strong support for her within the Māori caucus too. It's unfortunate that it's one of those situations where Māori are almost being pitted against Pasifika.
Do you think he didn't know the third article?
Yes. I think he did know the third article.
In his defence, when you're actually in government, it doesn't mean that you're ignoring the treaty if you don't know the articles, because ministers in government are much more, just like the public service, are much more commonly dealing with the principles of the Treaty of Waitangi or Te Tiriti as sort of outlined in the Lands case in the 80s and then sort of subsequently developed by the courts and the Crown. And, you know, there'll be references to sort of parts, you know, things that are mentioned in Te Tiriti, like, you know, Kawanatanga and Tinaranga Tiratanga. But, you know, in terms of the mechanisms of governance, you're usually talking about the principles. And so, it is feasible that, you know, just sort of slipped as a
just for our listeners, Article 3 is where Māori are guaranteed a free copy of Spear and a ticket to the King's Coronation.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has the lowdown on everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. Join some of the superstars of the investment and business world as they share advice from their time in the US so you can make your mahi count in this massive market. The Investment Fix podcast, brought to you by Invest New Zealand. Tune in today.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
What about Carmel Cepoloni as deputy? That's obviously an important moment for the Pasifika community. She's widely respected and liked within the team, has some critics on the
daughter
left.
Of a freezing worker.
Love that.
And a Labour Party
the
princess.
Two of them have a great narrative. That's their other strength as a twosome, I think.
To do Hutt Valley in West Auckland as well.
Yeah, and I think too the other strength that Hipkins has is like, you know, because he's worked in Parliament and he has that great understanding of how Wellington works, which is probably why he's been such an effective minister. But coupled with that is really strong support within his electorate, which you don't always see with those kind of ones that come through the offices.
Yeah, I saw Sam Suchdaven maybe observing that he's the second biggest majority of anyone in the Labour Party, the first being Jacinda Ardern. So that's a pretty solid base.
Yeah, and then, you know, Carmel's got a great backstory too, and I think in a cost of living crisis, people like the ideas of leaders who they can relate to, and that's going to be a narrative that Luxon is going to find challenging over the course of the election.
And Kelvin Davis remains deputy leader of the Labour Party. So they do that sort of 3-for-2 thing that they did when Grant Robertson was Deputy Prime Minister. Now maybe they get 4-for-2 because he remains there as Finance Minister. I don't know whether that might be overstating it. Ben, reshuffle is the other thing. Do you have any? I know you wrote a column last week about how much people care about reshuffles.
Yeah,
the entire population on the edges of their seats. Mm. To hear the dynamic, transformational Prime Minister Chris Hipkins announce the reshuffle. How do things turn out? I think that he will be sworn, goes to Ratana tomorrow, Tuesday, we're talking about Monday afternoon, then goes to Government House to be sworn in as Prime Minister on Wednesday, then returns to Parliament to catch up with Cabinet. And I'm not clear really whether we'll, after that, I think there might be a press conference after that, we might get some of the reining in stuff, or maybe we won't.
He's already done a bit of reshuffling. Yeah. He's already divested his portfolios.
Yeah.
Stuart Nash gets police back.
Yeah.
God.
Temporarily.
Wow.
Well, he announced, he said, Grant won't know it yet, but I've made him leader of the House, acting leader of the House. I mean, the other thing, I guess, is whether what's the symbolic portfolio that he gets. You know, there's in the past, Helen Clark and Jacinda Ardern have both had arts and culture. Jacinda Ardern had child poverty reduction. John Key, tourism. But you know, David Longy had education, right? Like, it's not. Chris Hipkins might. Would he retain police just in a kind of, this is the most important thing to hardworking New Zealanders?
No, I don't think so. Especially because he can't. You know, this is the bind as Minister for Police. You actually can't get involved in operational matters by law.
That's true.
You know,
that's true. It's the only point. It's a good point.
And so, you'd be a bit sort of
muzzled
powerless
in terms
to
of
kind
saying
of, yeah, a bit of a hostage of fortune.
And he definitely won't keep education because that's crazy.
It's a shame that he
during
won't
a
keep police
strikes,
too because, you know,
he,
his answers about the ram raids I thought were compelling, and he's, I think his degree was in criminology, wasn't it? So it seems like he's
yes,
probably
he said sort of
quite well informed.
He said he stumbled into criminology, went into, he said somewhere that he just sort of was doing an extra paper in first year to make up the numbers and ended up sticking it out for criminology. Someone who looks at the stuff a lot said to me yesterday that they'd never seen a more artful reframing of the law and order debate than he delivered in the press conference yesterday.
I thought so too.
But what's your reshuffle... reshuffle astrology, Ben?
It opens it up for more major changes than probably we would have been anticipating otherwise.
Because he vacates half the cabinet positions.
That's right. But also because, you know, you have this whole, you know, new broom now becomes part of the narrative, whereas if it was Ardern sort of shuffling people around, there would be a bit more of a sort of panicked look about it. That said, you wouldn't necessarily want to make sort of huge changes. You know, government still has to run for the next, 8 months at least in a public sense. And, you know, all sorts of little fidgety operational things can bubble up through portfolios and absolutely sink you during an election. You know, it's going back now, showing my age, but 2008, a proposed regulation about showerhead size became one of the biggest issues of the 2008 election because it chimed in with themes about nanny state and blah, blah. And so you don't really want to be blooding a lot of, you know, inexperienced people or putting them into new portfolios. So I think it'll probably be pretty limited. But you know, look, I have been wrong about most things this year.
But so. I think probably bringing some new faces in. I mean, he probably wouldn't need to do wholesale demotion just by reorganizing things and bringing some new faces in.
Barbara Edmund will come in, and she'll be commerce.
I mean, Jan Tinetti is probably a lock. I mean, she's already in cabinet, but she's a lock for education, I would have thought, now that he won't have the portfolio anymore. Maybe Aisha Varel to health and move Andrew Little. Who knows?
I don't think we'll see sort of a wholesale turnover. Porto Williams, David Clark.
Maybe we touched on
this. Probably be retired.
Maybe an Auckland minister. Like that, you know, a guy from the
Heart. Taking a cue from Simeon Brown.
Taking a cue from Simeon Brown, who's now Auckland issue spokesperson for the opposition. Have an Auckland. You know, Carmel Cipollone's one of the strings to her bow is that she's an Auckland MP, given that Chris Hipkins, in case you miss it, is a genuine hut boy. So, Auckland's important, and you know, well, among other things, whether or not light rail is one of the issues for the chopping board, I guess we'll find out. What else does? How does this make you feel? To wrap things up, I guess about what do your waters tell you, both of you, about the election that approaches? Chris versus Chris, Pepsi versus Coke. Are you excited? Are you fizzing like a freshly opened cola?
More like a kombucha.
I
think that it's going to shape up to be a much more interesting election now. And I think, Labor has a good fighting chance of putting up a more compelling case for re-election than perhaps they did before. And hopefully, as a result of Ardern stepping away because she's become such a lightning rod for vitriol and hatred and all of that sort of stuff, maybe people will start to refocus on the issues again now that, you know, she's not there to polarise people. I'm sure over the next few days, Hipkins and Cipollone will be, reading up on Agenda 21 and how they implement
it. What their instructions are.
What the instructions are.
Have they been chipped yet?
Their Microsoft vaccinations will be activated so that they can.
I wouldn't be surprised too if Ardern leaving helps to draw some support back from ACT and some of those outlier parties back to National, because, you know, in their mind that the enemy has now gone, so they can kind of return to their traditional camp, perhaps.
I, for what it's worth, reckon that because Labor and National are so clearly now going for the same patch, both squarely focused, they're going to say laser focused over and over again, and we're going to die on the median voter, yep, on middle New Zealand, not quite the same thing, but you know,
each of them are headed over the horizon from the opposite direction,
and that will
like a game of chicken, each to collide, yeah,
so
at
like
the center point,
not like a red peak election, but like the laser Kiwi. Yeah. Election, if we were to have a flag for it.
Well, maybe more the actual, the other one. What was that one called? The Lockwood flag election, because that's...
That's right, the two Lockwood flags.
The Lockwood flag.
The blue and black and the red and
the swing vote.
Black.
But I mean, what it does leave is a whole lot of territory outside that that game of bull rush that you just described for the likes of the Greens, ACT, Te Pāti Māori, and maybe others too. Maybe Mr. Coke and Pepsi, Winston Peters. Don't know. But it's one of the things to note is that in the Australian election, the two main parties have never fared more poorly, I think, and certainly in modern times. And that was a small target. Not wholly analogous, but quite a few similarities in terms of the way the contest played out there.
Well, look, you know, for whatever anyone thinks about Ardern, you know, I mean, I think I tweeted this and, you know, lots of Ardern supporters retweeted it, but when it's just the news, not sort of...
can't wait to hear about this tweet.
Well, after we finished the last pod, you know, I went back and I checked my email and there's, you know, when John Key resigned, I wrote a take for the spin-off and I wrote a quicker one for stuff that I think I just ripped off my first one. Mm. And then when Ardern resigned, you know, my inbox was full of Singapore radio, CNN, you know, like NPR, New York Times, Reuters, you know, the interest in Jacinda was huge because she had, you know, she had real, you know, obviously time and a place in the context, but she had, you know, extraordinary charisma. She had that X factor that people talk about. So is it a Coke versus Pepsi election now? Or is it a kind of Spree versus home brand cola kind of 10 months that we're digging into? You know, I mean, Luxon and Hipkins, both accomplished politicians. Well, you know, Hipkins is an accomplished politician. Luxon is doing well in the polls. He's sort of the upstart. But you would say that in terms of sort of charisma and interest and how compelling figures they kind of cut, you know, perhaps this election we're kind of playing a league down to what we're kind of accustomed to in New Zealand.
Well, we look forward to it. I mean, something will happen, always does. Events, dear boy. Thanks, Samuel, for producing us. Thanks, Spinoff members, for making it possible for us to gather at short notice to discuss these emergency issues. Thanks, Annabelle. Thanks, Ben. Talk soon.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.